The following lecture on the eyes and diabetes was given at the American Foundation for the Blind Center on Vision Loss in Dallas by Michelle Brockner, M.D., an ophthalmologist and member of the Center on Vision Loss Advisory Board. The lecture was given as part of a series sponsored at the center by Kappa Kappa Gamma.
Hi, everybody. Some faces look familiar. Appreciate the introduction. A couple things. Yes, I was a swimmer in a previous life, and a little bit about me. I was a swimmer at the University of Texas, as we say, the University of Texas, and I swam there on a scholarship and then graduated, went to medical school in Texas, and then before that I had gotten a degree in biology and in nursing, so I was also a nurse. And as a nurse, I saw a lot of diabetes. I worked in the emergency rooms, worked in home health, and actually worked my way through medical school as a nurse before ER even came out with that idea. And then from there I went into trauma surgery and then oculoplastics and eye surgery. So I've decided to set up a practice here in Dallas, and one of my passions is eye education and diabetes, glaucoma, macular degeneration in general. And I got invited to join the board of directors here, and I really have been impressed, and I'm very happy that they allowed me to participate. It's a great passion. As far as my practice, I end up speaking now all over Dallas, all over the country, predominantly about educating folks and educating them so that they can understand why doctors harp on you all the time about different things. Instead of just telling you, we need to make you understand in a sense that you understand the reason why. It's not that we're just telling you to do it because. And I'm a very visual person, so I use a lot of analogies. So if anybody doesn't understand anything, I would ask that they would raise their hand or just kind of flag me down and I will try to reanalyze what I'm saying. Today I'm going to do diabetes. I give this lecture probably in my office 20 times a day. I could probably do it in my sleep. But if I can just reach 3 people a day, I think that it will save vision phenomenally in this country. Diabetes will steal your vision and you won't even know it. Yes, your doctors tell you about your diabetes. Yes, you need to be under control. What I'm going to show you today, and I'm going to try to talk through some of the photos too, so bear with me because I know some people in here are a little visually challenged. I want you to understand the reasoning behind it, and I want you to understand the impact. Your eyes get impacted first, before your heart, before your kidneys, before anything else, with your diabetes. Okay? And so I'm going to start with that, and we'll go from there. All right, as she said, I am an ophthalmologist. That's 16 years of school, after high school. All right, the bridge the knowledge of your diabetes and your vision. And so my goal has been to help you understand why we harp at you. Get your blood sugar below 130. Get your hemoglobin A1C below 6.0. If some of you don't know what your blood sugar is, you need to know. If your you say, well, my doctors take care of that. Well, no, they don't. Yes, they're there to guide you, but you need to be informed in this day and era. You need to know what your blood sugar is first thing in the morning. You need to know what your hemoglobin A1C is. A hemoglobin A1C is a predictor or a actual number of what your blood sugar has been over the past 3 months. We know from research that 6.5 and below will preserve your vision. 6.0 will almost guarantee that you won't be affected. And that's an average of 130 or below for your blood sugar every day. That's 2 hours after a meal, and that's usually first thing in the morning. Okay, let's talk about what it does to your eyes. The dreaded word, diabetic retinopathy. Well, what does that mean to you? It sounds like a bunch of mumbo jumbo after the word diabetic. Retinopathy is the retina. And what is the retina? The retina is the lining in the back of your eye. If you think of your eye as a tennis ball and the inside lining as wallpaper, that wallpaper is what controls your vision as far as what it projects. So if there's damage there, your vision is going to be impacted and the message doesn't get sent. What happens in diabetes, if your blood sugar goes over 130 on a repeated basis, you start to get little hemorrhages, small little red dots in the wallpaper. It gets progressive. If you don't bring your sugar down, it starts to form these little yellow exudates or deposits in the wallpaper. The black and white photograph over here shows leakage. The white is all the leaking of the dye out of the blood vessels. What happens if you think about the walls in your house, you have pipes in the walls of your house. And when those pipes get old, or let's say they get weakened, they start to leak. The same thing happens in diabetes. If your blood sugar goes over 130, it weakens your pipes and they start to weep. And weeping, you don't feel it, you don't know that it's happening. The only way you know this is if you know what your blood sugar is. If your blood sugar is over 130, your pipes are probably weeping. From weeping, it goes to leaking, and leaking is the blood. You don't feel it, your vision does not get impacted at this time, at all. Then it turns to actual hard deposits, or what I like to term as rust. Then your pipe is going to burst, and if that pipe bursts, you still may not feel it, and you still may not be able to detect it in your vision. You still may be seeing 20/20. But after that happens, the next thing is what we call the big bleed. And with that in mind, it starts to really bleed, and it can fill the eye up with blood in 30 seconds if one of your bigger vessels breaks. And if that happens, that is complete blindness. And I'm talking total darkness. So, in this first picture, this is progression of diabetic damage. There's little bleeders, a little bit more. You can see that there's little black holes here where the bleeding has actually damaged the wallpaper. Here, you start to see some little microaneurysms, which are pooching of the actual pipes. And then you're going to start seeing swelling, which is this darker color right in the center. Now, the macula is a part of the retina. It's like the engine of the retina. And it's what tells you colors. It's what tells you how to thread a needle. It's fine vision. And those are the most sensitive cells, and they're right in the center here. Now, when you start to leak, well, what happens? Well, see this white? It's like cobwebbing. It's severe diabetic damage. If your sugar is over 140 on a regular basis and you start to bounce to 200s and 300s, this accelerates and all that leakage starts to gather and form cobwebs, okay? Just like spider webs. Doesn't that look like a spider web? And what happens is it attaches to that wallpaper and it's so sticky and gooey that it pulls the wall off. So it literally pulls your wallpaper down, and that's a retinal, that causes a retinal detachment. It's very hard to go into the eye and clean this up. It's fibrosis of the retina and finally a retinal detachment leading to vision loss. It's very hard to reattach it after that, and you will not recover all your vision, even if they reattach most of it. New vessels pull on the vitreous and lead to bleeding and scarring of the retina. Well, what does that mean? Well, with this, also, the eye is panicking. So what it does is it tries to form new pipes. With new pipes, it actually cuts off the blood supply to the eye, trying to get it there. There's too many superhighways, kind of like the hi-fi downtown, trying to get into downtown. So the eye starts to die. Now, this is an overall picture, and I really like this picture. It was put out by the American Academy of Ophthalmology. And this first picture shows a gorgeous orange, nice color, no bleeding, no little red dots. The blood vessels look really good. There's no blackening of the center. This is a normal eye, no diabetic retinopathy, but this is a diabetic that's keeping the sugars controlled. You move over here and you can see a little exudate right here, this yellow. It's a little leakage, what I call the weeping. You move over here, what do you see there? Is a little bleeding. Then this is my patient that's bouncing 160, 180, 200, more microaneurysms, a little proliferation, more exudates. I'm telling them, you will lose your vision. I have 3 people in my practice that have lost their vision, and that's all I want. I don't want any more. And I tell them, the first one is 34 years old with 4 kids, didn't listen to me, and he's blind now. Okay? The second one listened to me, he only lost his vision in one eye. Here you can see more exudates, more swelling, it's turning black, even blacker, okay? Now if you come down here, you can see there's the white cobwebbing forming, and this picture here is all red. Why do you think it's all red? That's all blood. The whole eye is full of blood, okay? Now, can you live in total darkness? It is very difficult to live in total darkness. If you have a choice, I probably would not want to live in total darkness. It's possible. You can do it. But it is harder and harder the older you get. And so what I say is be proactive, not inactive. Now, we will help you keep your eyesight, but you have to also keep an eye on your diabetes with us. We have to work as a team. This is my vision checklist that I use. And I go over this, like I said, every day. Monitor and record your blood sugars. I cannot stress this enough. You know, I get it every day. Well, you know, my blood sugar's the same every day. Well, how do you know that? Well, I don't. My doctor tells me that. Well, how does he know? Or how does she know? Well, they just do. Well, how do they magically know if they're not testing your blood sugar every day? Testing it once a month or once every 3 months is great, but if you truly have diabetes, which means you are on medication, you should be checking your sugar every morning, minimum of every morning, and recording it to follow the trend. Why? One reason is you need to communicate with your doctor. You know, I have a patient whose blood sugar started climbing. They were doing so great. They were 120, 128, 125, doing great. All of a sudden, their blood sugar started climbing to 166, and they're eating everything right. They're exercising. They didn't know why. Well, they were having a urinary tract infection. Their kidneys were infected. And what that showed them was an early sign. So when your sugar starts to rise, it can show your infection before you actually know you have it, which can save your life. It also showed this person, okay, let me look at my diet, which is the thing you need to look at first. I have some patients that can eat a little bit of potatoes, some that can't eat any, some that can eat some white tortillas once in a while, some that can't do that, some that can eat rice, some that can't. Most of my diabetics, I give them 5 rules. Stay off the white flour, meaning white bread, white rice, white pasta, and go to wheat. Exercise minimum of 20 minutes a day, meaning even for a 30-minute show on TV, if you get up on the commercials, you'll get a walk around for 15 minutes if you just get a walk around on the commercial. So any excuse I hear, oh, it's too cold, it's too hot, doesn't cut it. I can figure out a way for you to do 5 minutes of exercise, which will fool your body into burning your calories and burning your sugar. Second of all, eating knowledge and understanding comes back to my other rule. Okay, what makes your sugar go up? Well, does orange juice make your sugar go up? That's what you take when your sugar goes low, right? Well, think about it. If you eat an orange, it's the same thing as drinking orange juice, so your sugar is going to go up. So I would stay away from oranges only if you need them. So berries are good. Blueberries, raspberries, bananas, half a banana, half an apple. Those fruits are good for you. They're fiber and they're good for you. And they don't crank your sugar up over 200. Oranges will. Now, exercise, like I said, cleared by your doctor. You know, it's cold now. Well, there's malls.
How does coffee impact your insulin?
It's different for every person, but it's a stimulant, and it can actually mess with your insulin. It can actually make you need more. Some people will need more, and actually some people might need less.
So when a doctor tells you that, is he speaking about the insulin that you take or the insulin that your body's already producing?
It can be both, actually. There's no way to tell. And the way to tell that, and this is what I tell people, there's no way to tell what your body's producing and what you're putting into your body's. Only thing you're going to know. If you're on a sliding scale, you'll know how much you're putting in, but you don't know what your body's making. The way to tell that is eat the same thing. I know this sounds really crazy, but eat the same thing for 3 days, and I mean exactly the same thing. Take your sugars 2 hours after a meal. Take your sugar first thing in the morning. And when you introduce the coffee, note the time that you drink the coffee, and then see what your blood sugar is 2 hours after, and record it over the next 3 days and see what it does, because everybody's different, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next, always get your vision checked with a full dilated medical exam. Now, optometrists are great. They get the basic knowledge down, but if you are a complicated diabetic, you need to be seen an ophthalmologist every 6 months. My patients, until they're controlled, they see me every 6 months. Once they prove to me that their hemoglobin A1C stays below 6.0 and they're at 130 and they're doing what they are supposed to be doing, then I let them out a little bit more. I give them 10 months. They prove that to me, it's a year. The minute they slip and I send a letter to their doctor within 24 hours of them seeing me, so we're all on the same page. Life is precious and so is your vision. You know, I don't know if I could go a day without seeing this smiling face, and if I was to lose my vision, that would impact me directly. So vision is precious. We pay money to get our teeth fixed. We pay money to see doctors. We pay money to go to Walmart, but how valuable is your vision? And that's my biggest message. Any questions?
Anybody has a question? I want to use the mic.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
On most of the things, medication that you see on the TV and stuff like that, it'll say, don't take it if you have glaucoma.
Right.
And my ophthalmologist told me that the glaucoma that a diabetic has is different than that glaucoma, and that where you could take a medication and it wouldn't hurt you.
I agree to disagree with that ophthalmologist at this point. It really depends on what type of glaucoma you have. You can have diabetes and have, there are 12 different types of glaucoma. You can have diabetes and have a different type of glaucoma. Diabetes affects your risk to getting glaucoma. Glaucoma is a disease that attacks the nerve that connects your eye to your brain. And what happens is that is usually open-angle glaucoma, meaning that the flow of fluid through your eye that keeps the pressure in your eye is not affected as much as somebody else who has what we call narrow-angle glaucoma. And that kind of glaucoma is their pipes get shut down if they take decongestants or cold medicines, and that can throw them into a different type of glaucoma. I have diabetics who have closed-angle glaucoma, and so those medications do affect it. So to answer your question directly, I would say I would not risk it until you ask your ophthalmologist which type of glaucoma you have. Because I have people that do have open-angle glaucoma that have taken a cold medicine and their pressures have risen in their eye. And the goal is bringing your pressure down in your eye to save that nerve. And when you raise that pressure, even if it's just 1 or 2 points with a cold medicine, that can impact you. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it really depends on what type of glaucoma you have, and it really depends on what your body does with those cold medicines. I tell all my patients with diabetes, if you're going to take over-the-counter cold medicines, I need you to call me and ask me first if you are at risk for glaucoma, and I've told you you are at risk for glaucoma because I check all my patients who have diabetes for glaucoma, and it's in your chart that you are at risk. I would tell them, if you have to use it, let me know. I'd like you to come in and let me check your pressure and see if your body responds differently. And I do that for all my patients because I've seen too many times where they have open angle glaucoma and their pressure still has risen from the cold medicine. So I would say I disagree with that blanket statement, but you may have the type of glaucoma where it's okay for you to take cold medicine. Does that answer your question, Gunnar? Okay, anybody else? Yes, sir.
Yes, I was gonna ask, can you drink a beer every now and then if you have diabetes?
Okay, good question, because I don't want to destroy your fun. I was actually gonna go over that a little bit. You know, your body, think about your body and how it handles the food you eat. Our society eats our biggest meal at dinner. Well, it's kind of backwards. If you're diabetic, you need to have your biggest meal of the day at lunch. And if you work, it's hard to have a beer at lunch. So I would say a beer at night, no. I would say on the weekend, a beer at lunchtime, yes. But with that knowledge, if I'm going to have that beer, if I'm going to have that, I know I need to go walk that night to burn those calories. It's a trade-off. Light beer is your friend. There are certain beers that the carbohydrates are lower and the sugars are lower, and I would try to shoot towards those. If the flavor of the beer is what you like, I would try to find the one with the lowest carbohydrates and the lowest sugar content. If you swear by Heineken or Coors and you have to have a beer, then you need to look at your lifestyle and say, okay, I'm going to have a beer at lunch on Saturday with you know, the knowledge that I'm going to need to walk 20 minutes that night. And what I tell also, and I'm going to tie this in, your biggest meal needs to be lunch. I'm not saying go live this life that's boring, nothing fun, I can't eat any of the good foods. I'm saying if I'm going to eat the good foods, when I check my sugar that morning, it better be 130 or below. And if I'm going to cheat, as we say to my patients, if you're going to cheat, cheat at lunch, not at dinner. Dinner, your metabolism is slowing down. It should be your smallest meal of the day, okay? so that when you wake up the next morning, you're not behind the eight ball already. And, you know, you don't wake up with, oh, wow, my sugar's 300. I guess I shouldn't have had that beer at 9 o'clock at night. You see what I'm saying? Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
So the information you just gave, you're basing that if a person has maybe an 8 to 5 schedule?
Right.
So what if you're a
night person?
Night cat.
Okay. If you're a night person, it's more of a challenge because we know that working night shifts adversely affect your body as a diabetic. It's very hard, and I can't tell my patients, try to get on the day shift. They look at me like I'm crazy, you know. What you have to do is you have to flip your day, and you have to do it consciously. So if, let's say, you sleep during the day, which is your night, then you're going to have your, when you wake up, that's your breakfast, okay? So let's say you wake up at 6 to work a 7 shift. Have your breakfast. Your lunch is going to be 1 or 2 in the morning. You're going to have that be your biggest meal because you're still up and moving and grooving. And then right before you go to sleep, it should be a small meal. You see what I'm saying? Just flip it. You kind of have to look at it as, where am I maximally going to burn my calories, my sugar, and my carbs? It's when I'm up, I'm in the middle of the day. Go ahead.
And how does the white product that you mentioned before affect your blood sugar, such as rice, white bread, potatoes?
Okay.
I think you said sugar.
Yeah. Basically, I tell my folks, when they first come in and they've just been diagnosed, I said, okay, you're overwhelmed. You haven't made it to your diabetes education nutrition class yet. These are the fast and hard rules. No white flour, meaning white bread, white rice, white pasta. The reason why is we know that white flour is a complex carbohydrate. It cranks your blood sugar up. Your body, when it hits your system, the sugar just goes straight through the roof. We know with wheat products, because it's higher fiber, lower carbs, lower sugar, it doesn't do that. It keeps you stable. White flour is very processed, and we think that's part of the problem. So anything white will crank your sugar exponentially high. Potatoes do the same thing. Oranges do the same thing. Now, everybody's a little different. You know, when I make a blanket statement, anything else?
Do
high
exercises help?
No. I wish. I'd have everybody do them. Yes, ma'am.
When you get up in the morning and your blood sugar is normal, say 90 to 100, what if you decide not to eat breakfast and not to take your insulin?
Ooh. But this is what happens. If your body thinks that you're starving, and that means by not putting anything into the tank, okay, into your body, it's going to store and your sugar is going to crank up even higher. What you have, and I'll tell you, I have diabetics, oh, I've starved myself, doc, and my sugar's going higher. Because their body thinks that you are starving. And it's going to say, hold on to everything that it has. And it's going to crank your sugar up even higher because it thinks that you need the energy, okay, and the sugar. So your liver releases all this, and your sugar's going higher and higher. Breakfast, you, as a diabetic, that is so important to have. Whether it's just a piece of wheat bread and a cup of coffee or a bowl of oatmeal, okay? But breakfast is so important because if you're already doing great by waking up, oh, wow, my blood sugar is 92, great. At lunch today, I can cheat maybe, you know? You know. So, well, I'm just saying, you know, you didn't wake up with it at 200, okay? And you're like, oh, I'm already behind the eight ball. I'm going to have to really be good today, you know? So blood sugar of 90, skipping breakfast, no. Skipping your insulin, absolutely horrible because your insulin just doesn't protect you at that point. What you're injecting into your body covers you. No matter what anybody tells you, short-acting, long-acting, it's still in your system. It's going to help you throughout the day. And what you're doing is you're yo-yoing your body. Oh, I'm not going to eat because my sugar is 90 and I'm not going to take my insulin. Well, that impacts you at lunch, dinner. It's going to even impact you the next day. What we're going for is rolling hills, not mountains and valleys. All right, one more.
You said lunch would be our largest meal. When do you recommend exercising? This is just your personal
opinion. My personal opinion. Well, if I was a diabetic and I was doing pretty good, I personally think after you eat your last, your dinner or your supper, if you can, I think walking 20 minutes, that's a good start. After your last meal of the evening, if you walk for 20 minutes, it fools your metabolism into, oh wow, she's still going. I need to burn. I need to burn what she's put in there. So your metabolism is still going even by the time you lay down and go to sleep. Now, sometimes that's hard for people because they've walked and now they're all revved and they can't sleep. But I usually tell people 20 minutes of walking after dinner. You know, get your spouse, your friends, and just walk 20 minutes. That, to me, is better for you than getting up at 6 in the morning and just knocking out 20 miles. But some form of exercise, aerobic, 20 minutes, doesn't have to sweat, you know, don't have to just knock it out, but just walk. And usually most of my clientele does a 20-minute walk. Some of them can't do it except at lunchtime, so they'll have their biggest meal at lunch, and that's their first 30 minutes, and then they'll go walk 30 minutes. So, you know, it's kind of personalized, but 20 minutes in the evening is usually when most of my people do it. Why?